Speaking of return guys, Speedy B finds a seam. Brandon Banks has some room. Look out! Banks near the 50 to the 40. Brandon Banks down near the 20. He's going to score! Touchdown! Oh my goodness!
Gable running away from defenders down the sideline.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, are you aware of the CFL Twitter Awards?
I am.
Okay, so I guess last year it was something that I wish I knew who started it. I cannot remember for the life of me who it was. But they can be found on Twitter at CFLT Awards. This year they're doing a category for favorite podcast. We do a podcast, so I guess we're nominated? Does that mean make us award nominees?
Vote for us. Vote for us.
I hope people vote for us.
I believe that the guy who started it was Quinn. Was it Quinn Magnuson or something? The guy on Twitter from Saskatchewan used to play in the league.
I think you're right. That sounds right.
Yes, I believe that's who it was.
Good. Let's give him a plug then. That's good. Good for you on remembering, because my memory is terrible.
I do my best.
So. I don't think we have a hope in hell of winning this thing because I think everyone out there has a thing against gingers. And I think you living out there on the island, I think they have a thing against Islanders. Mm-hmm. I think because you don't live in a CFL city, they look down on you. I think yes. because I have red yes. hair, they look down on me.
I know. You just can't. It's just tough, being us.
Yeah, so show some guts. Go against your bias and vote for Mike and myself because we deserve it.
Just do it. Just do it.
Now, to be honest, though, there's a lot of great CFL podcasts out there. I listen to a ton of them. I know you listen to a ton of them. So, like, whoever wins is going to deserve it, obviously. It'd be nice if we could add, award-winning podcasters to our resume. I'm not sure what that would really do, but best of luck to everyone out there, and let's have some fun with this.
I agree.
All right, so let's move on to the news of the week. It was kind of a slow news week in the CFL, but yesterday as I was scrolling the old Twitter feed, I came across a post on RiderFans.com, and it's a fan forum for the Saskatchewan Roughriders.
That hornet's nest.
Yeah, not exactly a place where I am very welcome. So I saw, I believe it was BC Lions Den, Brian from BC Lions Den, that tweeted out the post. And just to give you a little heads up on where we're heading here, the title of the post is League-Wide Boycott the CFL Day. And here is what the user, whose name is RFSC, had to say. The new PI rule must go immediately, 2 exclamation points. I suggest we pick a weekend where everyone stay home from all CFL games to show our disgust over this BS rule, 1 exclamation point. The league won't listen any other way. Now, I know that a few fans will trickle in on said day, but if the parks were empty for one weekend, maybe they would get the point that this new rule is killing the game. Your thoughts, Michael?
Well, I have a feeling that his opinion was, it's based on that pass interference call in the Riders game. I'm sure if, the call went the Riders' way, he wouldn't be in such a huff, So I think it's ridiculous. That's not going to happen. It's just one fan blowing off some steam. So nothing to worry about here, Joshua.
No, I agree. And if the Riders were 4-0, would there be a post like this?
No.
Now, it seems like recently I have been sort of sticking up for Rider fans. It's making me feel a little dirty. I usually have to have a shower after we record the show because I just feel wrong. But I got to give it up to them because like 99.9% of the people that responded to this were basically calling this guy an idiot. So that's heartening to see. But like, the problem is that the PI rule is not ruining the game at all.
It's not.
It's not being called, it's not overly called. It's not the reason why there's so many flags. So, it's one guy, like you said, one guy venting. He's upset that his team is winless. And, even if you could organize something like this, it would never happen. You're never going to see go to a game where there's no fans unless the league, they do something like what happened in, I think it was Baltimore when they had the riots after, not to get into some social commentary, but they had a game between the Orioles and the Royals or something that was in an empty stadium.
Yeah, or if you're, in soccer games where there's been riots from the fans and stuff, and they have to play in an empty stadium because of the fear that they'll riot again or something like that. But that's probably not going to happen in a CFL stadium. So,
yeah. So, that was it. That was the biggest piece of news sort of to come out of the week, and it wasn't really even news. It was just something that I thought was funny, and we get a chance to sort of call someone an idiot besides ourselves for a change.
It's always fun calling people idiots.
Well, when you act like one, you got to get called one. And you and I know quite a bit about acting like idiots, I would assume.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, so let's move on to the important stuff of the week, and those were the games that were played. So let's kick it off with Edmonton going into Ottawa and winning the second half of a back-to-back against the Red Blacks. What did you see in that game that you liked? What didn't you like? Let the fans know.
Well, it's a huge game for Shakir Bell. I mean, he stood out huge. He came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden he has 18 carries for 144 yards, an average of 8 yards a carry. So he really stood out in that game. I think that he might be getting a lot of reps going forward, maybe as a starting running back for Edmonton.
I was extremely impressed with Bell.
Yeah.
We talked about podcasts earlier. One of the newer ones that came out this year that I'm really enjoying is the Eskimo Empire podcast. Mm-hmm. I've been listening to them since day one, and they were really high on Shakir Bell in training camp. So when Chad Simpson was brought in after John White was injured, I wouldn't say that they were surprised, but they were hoping that Bell would get a shot, and Bell languished on the practice roster for a couple of games. Simpson got hurt, Bell got a shot, and like you said, 18 carries for 144. Like, and it wasn't just the yards to me, though. It was he hit the hole hard. He made his decision quick. He made people miss. He was hard to bring. Like, he just looked like, oh, my God, this guy's going to be a star in this league.
Yeah, every time I touched the ball, it was he just ran off. Like, it seemed like 10 yards each carry, almost 10 yards each carry.
Oh, yeah, like so, you said, it was 8 yards a carry. So
yeah, that's like, a crazy average.
That's so amazing.
Like, I don't expect him to keep up that average, but I expect to see a lot of him going forward. You know, Nichols looked, yeah, not so good. 3 interceptions, 1 TD. You know, kind of dropped off from last game, I thought. What do you think out of Nichols?
Yeah, same here. Matt Nichols, he's not bad, but I think at this point we kind of have to recognize that this is who he is. Yeah. He is, what's the best way to put it? I guess he's a bit up and down, if you want to sort of, you know, be nice. I don't think he's ever going to be the type of quarterback that takes over a game. He's not going to dominate. He threw those two, I think two of the, no, all 3 interceptions were in the red zone, and I think 2 of them were in the end zone, and one of them was at like the 4-yard line. Like, it was just, they were, if you're going to throw an interception, which, you know, you should obviously try not to, throwing them when you're down that close to scoring territory is never advisable.
Yeah, that game could have been out of hand quickly if it wasn't for those 3 picks near the end zone. So,
yeah, he to me is now, I'm going to use him as the poster boy for why quarterback wins are a completely meaningless statistic. Mm-hmm. I think I've been over this before. I know I've been over this before on Twitter. I've probably written about it too. I'm not sure if we've ever really talked about it on the show, but I cannot stand quarterback wins as a statistic for how good a QB is. And Matt Nichols as a starter is 2-0, and he hasn't looked great in either of his 2 starts. He was okay the week before against Ottawa, but this week he looked downright terrible. So judging him, oh, he's 2-0, so therefore he's a great quarterback, it's hogwash.
Yeah, I agree with that, actually. And the other guy that stood out was Lawrence. You know, he's catching the ball well. 4 catches for 92 yards and a touchdown. I mean, he had that long bomb that really turned around the game for Edmonton. I think they were down by 1 late in the game, and they threw it up for him, and he scored that touchdown. So, you know, he's a dangerous player, and he always impresses me. I really like Lawrence.
Yeah, I'm a big Lawrence fan, too. And, like, he reminds me a lot of Archie Amerson.
Ooh.
He does. He was Amerson started as a running back, and they you know, moved him out to the slot, and he became a 1,000-yard receiver, and he was dangerous in the punt and kick return game. He, you know, if you ever needed him to carry the ball, he could do that too. He was just a multifaceted weapon, and I see Lawrence in sort of the same vein as I saw Amerson.
That's a blast from the past. I loved me some Archie Amerson back in the day.
Yeah, except when he signed with Toronto.
I don't even recall that.
Yeah, I want to say him when it was him and Joe Montford, I think.
I remember Montford.
Yeah, I think it was after the Grey Cup year or the year after that. I think they both went at the same time.
Yeah, might have been 2000.
Yeah, and I think Amerson was only there for a season, if even that. And I know he came back. He came back here. So did Montford. But it's weird the things you kind of remember and don't remember, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What did you think about the benching of Odell Willis after he took that penalty?
I thought it was interesting. You know, you want to have your best players on the field. But I kind of liked it because, you know, it was such a dumb penalty. And, you know, a lot of the time players make these dumb penalties and there's no repercussions. So, you know, I maybe wouldn't have kept him off for as long as Jones did. But I didn't mind it, you know, maybe just shorten it a bit.
Yeah, that's exactly what I think. He has to be held accountable for the mistakes he made, and he was. But like, as I was watching, I was like, at some point, the discipline for being undisciplined, it becomes too much.
Mm.
Now, lucky for Edmonton, it didn't cost them the game, although the penalty did. You know, Ottawa sustained a drive and scored a touchdown, so it was a really stupid penalty on Willis's part. But at some point, you kind of have to, you know, forgive. Maybe not forget, but you got to forgive. He's their best defensive lineman. And I know Edmonton has an amazing defensive line. Marcus Howard's great. Eddie Steele's really good. Like, they have a really, really solid defensive line. But Willis is the guy that sort of, you know, he's commanding the double teams. And look at the way Ottawa just drove down the field after the penalty. If Willis was out there, maybe that doesn't happen.
Yeah. I believe it was, they were coming off the field, I believe, on that play. It was third down, and he made that stupid penalty. So that was a very bad decision on his part.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to talk about Chris Williams. I mean, he's doing pretty good in Ottawa. Seven catches for 90 yards, and he just looks, you know, the punt returns aren't there necessarily. Maybe he's not getting as good of blocking as he did when he was with Hamilton. But, you know, he's the go-to guy in the receiving corps, I believe.
You know, it's weird. I wrote a little bit about Williams yesterday on Three Down Nation for my like weekly recap piece.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't – he's been solid, but he hasn't been spectacular. And mm-hmm. he was brought in to be spectacular, and it's kind of like he's top five in the league in receiving yards and receptions, and he's their leading receiver, but it just feels like he hasn't really done anything. You know what I mean? Like, it's odd because obviously he's been playing well, but it just feels like he hasn't taken over like I think it was expected of him to do.
Yeah, he hasn't been dominant, but he's been solid. Like, he hasn't come back from the NFL and just dropped off the map like a lot of players do. I think that he will make some noise as we go along here. He would have had that punt return touchdown if it wasn't called back. So I think the opportunity is there to have a big season, but yeah, you're right. He hasn't been like over the top spectacular yet.
Yeah, like I agree with you. I think at some point he'll get back. It'll click, and then all of a sudden you'll be like, oh my god, he had 180 yards and two touchdowns that were both, you know, 60 yard bombs. You know what I mean? But
yeah.
just for the first four games, he's been a little quiet, and maybe that has to do with Ottawa's receiving corps being like They're pretty good. Like, there's a lot of – like, Brad Sinopoli. Brad Sinopoli has stepped up huge. I was very skeptical of him, not because I don't like him or I don't think he's a good player, but he never really did much in Calgary as a receiver. But he has just – it's like he's taken the leaps, the leap signing in Ottawa. Like, he's just – like, yeah, he might be right now, maybe outside of Andy Fantuz, the best Canadian receiver in the CFL.
Yeah, I've been impressed with him, too. It seems that every time he touches the ball, he's just max effort trying to get that first down. You know, he catches pretty much everything that's tossed his way. So, in Calgary, there's so much depth there at a receiver. He didn't really get much of a chance to show what he has. But now that he's in Ottawa, even though they have a great receiving corps, he's really showing what he has since he's been there.
Absolutely.
And I wanted to talk about Walker a bit. You know, he can break off those big runs. He has that speed, but I don't think he has that good average. And you know, every time they do that shotgun handoff, he just doesn't seem to get many yards.
No, he's not a up the middle. He's not a between the tackles runner.
Yeah,
that's not his game. It's not that he's bad. Like, again, I always feel like when we criticize players, people think that we're saying that they're no good or you know what I mean. But no. It's not that. He's just he's not the type of player that's going to get you the 5-6 yards up the middle every time he touches the ball. He's always trying to make a big play. He's probably best used as a change of pace back.
Yeah.
Is it Jeremiah Johnson, I think, is in?
Yeah, I believe so.
In Ottawa? Yeah, he's injured. So I think when he gets back, we're going to see maybe more of him in the backfield for those – on those first down and second and short plays and not Walker.
Yeah, maybe like, you know, toss it out to the outside more with him. Try to get him to the outside with all his speed and get him some more screens and you know, maybe that'll be he'll be used better that way. And yeah, like you said, when Johnson gets back, he'll be the between the tackles running back for Ottawa.
Yeah, you brought up his rushing average. I pulled it up here. It's 3.4 yards per carry.
Yeah.
That's just not you. No, that's not acceptable. No. That's bad by NFL standards when you have three downs to get a first down, let alone CFL, where you need 5 to 6 yards per carry to be considered, as far as I'm concerned, an elite back in the CFL.
Yeah. Only 17 penalties in this game.
Mm. Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. That's probably the lowest of the week.
So. I would guess.
Yeah. Just wanted to put that there.
Do you think the Red Blacks have come a little bit back down to earth?
I'd say so. I mean, they really shouldn't have been in this game as much as they were. You know, should have been Edmonton should have pulled ahead like earlier in the game, and it should have been another blowout like it was last week. So, you know, I think Ottawa has some talent, and I think they already won two games, so I think they'll be, you know, maybe win like 5 or 6 more, maybe, but I don't think they're as good as they showed in the first two games of the season.
Yeah, it's funny. I was sort of like patting myself on the back after the first couple of weeks, being like, "Hey, I said they'd make the playoffs, but these last two games." And they now, to be fair, they were against Edmonton, who even without Mike Riley and with Matt Nichols, I think they're still a really good football team. So yeah. I'm not sure if we can sort of knock the Red Blacks too much, but their schedule, like, they haven't played an East Division team yet, as far as I can. Oh no, they played Montreal week one. I'm wrong. I'm a fool.
But they played. They play Calgary next, so that'll be.
Yeah, and it's in Ottawa, so. Yeah, that's gonna be a tough test.
Yeah. You know, shout out to the Ottawa fans for coming out to the park every week. So I just want to say that because they have a rowdy bunch there showing up to the games every week.
I will be joining them for the Ticats game later in the season, so I'm sure I'll be getting my fair share of cat calls.
Yes.
While I'm there. But hey, you know what? It's Ottawa. I'm close enough. I've never been to a game there. I think we talked about this before, but I'm just glad to go. So anything else you got to say about this matchup, or do you want to move on?
I think that pretty much covers it.
Pretty much covers it. So now we go to Saskatchewan, where the sky is falling. The sky is falling as the Riders drop to 0-4 after losing to the Lions.
Yeah, another close one for another close loss for Saskatchewan. You know, Glenn putting up huge numbers again, 360 yards passing. So the offense doing its thing still. You know, 517 total yards. The defense just not helping them out at all.
Yeah. Like it reminds me a lot of the 2012 Ticats.
Oh God.
Yeah, I know, right? Try to not bring them up as much as possible, but that was a team that the offense could pretty much score at will, and the defense allowed the other team to score at will.
Yeah, that year was impressive for the offense. I mean, it was like we're unstoppable. But yeah.
Glenn has almost 1,300 passing yards, and he's the only one over 1,000 yards. And he didn't play the first half of the first game, so like there's not really much more that the offense can do. One guy that's really impressed me is Jerome Messam. He leads the league in yards from scrimmage. And last week he had 9 carries for 62 yards and 7 catches for 75 yards. He's a beast out there.
Yeah, it's a really big bounce back season for him. I mean, I thought he kind of fell off the map a bit the last couple of years, but he's getting some opportunities and taking advantage of it. And they have the good 1-2 punch with Messam and Allen. I mean, Allen had 7 touches for 80 yards too. So
yeah, and I think he scored a touchdown.
They have a great rushing attack, and Glenn's doing his thing, putting up huge numbers, and they have a pretty good receiving corps. So if the defense ever could, you know, stop somebody, this would probably be a pretty decent team with a better record.
Yeah, we talked about, you know, Chamberlain's sort of, in my view, tenuous job status.
I'd have to maybe change my opinion on that. I've you know, he's been things he's been saying in the media, and the fans are coming after him pretty hard there in Ryderville.
Yeah, he sounds like a guy who's on his way out, doesn't he?
He
like
does.
Somebody who's just like, I'm just, you know what, scorched earth. I'm burning this place to the ground when I leave.
Yeah, it seems that way right now.
But the defense is on him. Like, famously, he took over command of that defense late in the season last year when they were losing all those games. And he has a defensive coordinator. But from all reports out of Saskatchewan, he's the guy calling the plays. His fingerprints are all over this defense. And it's the defense that's the problem. So, like, what if the buck doesn't stop with him, where does it stop?
Yeah, exactly. You know, he's fired his offensive coordinator, fired his defensive coordinator. So, you know, no one else left to, like, put the blame on, except for the players, which he kind of did this week.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the team that actually won this game.
Yeah.
Travis Lule, man, he's I believe it was you that said last week that you thought he might be a little overrated.
Yeah, I did.
And okay,
and Harris too. So
yeah, and to be fair, Lule's numbers weren't like spectacular. You know, 12 of 21 for 127 yards.
But the rushing.
But 105 yards on the ground, and he threw 2 touchdown passes. So
yeah,
you can't sneeze at that either. But he does. He's sort of looking like he's a lot more comfortable. And if he's healthy and playing at the top of his game, I think he could be one of the best quarterbacks in the league.
Yeah.
Do you have a thing against gingers too? Are you like that? Are you one of those people?
No, I don't got anything against the red-haired folk. I don't know. But he's proven me wrong. So, I mean, if he can return to form in 2011 the way that he was back then you're right. He could be one of the best in the league. And I like to see him running the ball because I think that adds a nice dimension to his game. But it worries me every time he does. I'm just glad that he's, you know, sliding feet first every time he takes off.
Yeah, it those rushes, though, it was – sure, he made some nice plays, but Saskatchewan's defensive ends just did not at all anticipate or play the zone read properly. They just kept crashing down on the running back. And it was not just Alex Hall. Like, Alex Hall, I think, got beat twice, but John Chick got beat on one. And, yeah, they did not even – Even after the first two, it was like, oh, he's not going to do it again. And then, boom, he busts a 40-yard run. So,
yeah,
like, again, it seems to go back to, and I hate to sort of take away from a team winning and more talk about the team that lost, but again, it goes back to that Riders defense. They're just not very good.
Yeah, it seemed like they didn't prepare for Lule taking off at all. I mean, I guess not many teams would, but, you know, he took advantage of it. He saw the play and he used his legs and got some big yards. I mean, I didn't think he'd ever stop running on that one, the 40-yard dash he had. So, good on him.
Yeah. The takeaway from this, I can't believe the Riders have lost 3 in a row at home.
I know it's. I'm sure we'll get into it, but it kind of worries me that they're 0-4 and we're coming in there next week.
Yeah, we will definitely be getting into that in a bit because we're pretty much, you know, in lockstep on that one because, yeah, there's some concern on my part, a little bit of angst, if you will.
Do you want to talk about that PI call that had some controversy around it? I forget who was involved. Do you know what I'm talking about here?
The one in the end zone that set up the one-yard plunge? Yeah, I know which one you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't think that should have been called. But
well, here's the thing. Whether it was pass interference or not, it was illegal contact. That would have been called. Now, the difference is they would not have had the ball on the 1 yard line.
Would have been 10 yards, right?
Would have been a 10 yard penalty.
Yeah.
But that doesn't say that they wouldn't have still, you know, gone down the field and scored.
Mm-hmm.
But,
yeah, especially against that defense.
Yeah. It was, you know, to be fair, it was a little ticky tacky. But again, I can't get too up in arms about it because it was still a penalty regardless. So it's not, and it was on second down, so it's not like the Riders were getting the ball back. It was going to be first down BC no matter what. But yeah, the difference between having the ball at like the 35 or having the ball in the one obviously changes the complexion of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, it was, you know, if that happened to Hamilton, I'd be up in arms about it too. But, you know,
it is what it is. So I just got one last point. Those Riders signature jerseys are bloody awful.
Yeah, I would agree.
Okay,
I don't know if they're, you know, I hate the hockey style jerseys that they put out, like the Eskimos have them.
Winnipeg has them. Blacks.
Yeah, the Red Blacks, Winnipeg. I hate the logo on the front. So I think I hate those more, but you're right. The Saskatchewan ones are pretty damn ugly.
Yeah, I think, and that's the difference. I don't like the ones with the logo. The Edmonton one doesn't bother me as much. For some reason, I look at that one and it looks better than the other ones. But yeah, to me, it's like those ones are bad, whereas this one is just hideous. Like, I think those other jerseys, if they didn't have the logo on the front and just had the number, would be fine.
Kind of weird. Like the coloring and the looks like there's like Atari graphics or something on the, you know, the pixels or something on the helmets.
Yeah, they look like, I think they're like, they're supposed to be like wheat. Like if you look really closely at it, it sort of looks like, you know how they have in their logo, they have like the wheat.
Yeah.
On the sort of looks like that, but it also sort of looks like they're trying to go for like a watermelon look with the helmet. I don't really know what's going on. All I know is that it's an eyesore, and the sooner that they stop wearing those, the better.
Yeah, I think that this will be the last year of those alternate jerseys because I heard they might be switching from Reebok to someone else. So
I can't really say, but I've been given some pretty good information that it's probably going to be Adidas.
Yeah,
I've heard that too. Does the new uniforms. So, and the sort of the thing I've heard is that the signature jerseys are actually owned by Reebok, but I've also by the same place that I heard about Adidas, I've also heard that the signature jerseys might still be able to be used. So I don't know. All I know is that like when these came out last year, I liked Hamilton's, I liked Montreal's, Calgary's looked pretty good, but and BC's they did their gunmetal black ones the year before, and I liked those as well, but. I understand that, like, you know, you bring out new stuff like this so people will buy more merchandise. But I really do think that those Rider ones were simply – it was an experiment to see, like, well, we think these guys will buy anything. So let's make the ugliest thing possible and let's see how many people get them. And there's quite a few in the stands. Not a ton, but there's more than I would expect.
Well, I'm sure quite a few people bought them in Saskatchewan there.
Yeah. Anything else to touch on with the Lions' victory over the Riders?
I don't believe so.
All right, so let's move on to the last non-Ticats game of the week. Calgary beats Winnipeg. Calgary is 3-1. They have the best record in the CFL, and I have not been impressed with them at all, really.
No, neither have I, actually. You know, Bo Levi Mitchell has looked meh, you know? Meh.
Yeah, you know.
21, 165 yards, one touchdown. Cornish had a breakout game. I will say that, 15 for 120 yards.
My fantasy team, thank you, John Cornish. By the way, 4-0 now. Just want to put that out there.
I think I did some decent pickups this week, so we'll see how that turns around. I'm only 1-3, so but it's still early.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You don't win fantasy championships in July.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, Cornish, you know, maybe this is his breakout game and he can start racking up the 100-yard performances. You know, I think Eric Rogers is, he has good game after good game. So once Bo Levi Mitchell gets rolling, I think that he'll be a top receiver in the league.
Yeah, I was doubtful of Eric Rogers because coming into the season, he had such a small sample size. But don't get too used to him because I'm pretty sure that he's in the last year of his contract. And if he continues playing this well, he's going to get a shot down south. So you're right. He has been their go-to guy, and he's just been great. I've enjoyed watching him play. So I can't really add anything to that. That's all that sort of insightful.
I thought that Willie had another good game. You know, his numbers are great. His percentage was great again, 22 of 27. He had 289 yards, 2 TDs, 1 interception, but
and it was a killer interception too. It was like the last play of the game, and he just now. Juwan Simpson made a great play on the ball, but it didn't look like Willie saw him at all.
No, it was it went right to him. So you know they had to have that last drive, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah, and you know what? Sometimes we say it all the time when a receiver makes a really nice catch, and we say, like, the DB, there's nothing the DB could have done to have stopped it. In this case, Juwan Simmons just made a nice play. It was a bit of a bad read on Willie's part. I guess probably just didn't see him. But sometimes the defense just makes a play, and, you know, Simpson's a playmaker. He's one of the best linebackers in the league for a reason, and yeah, that's going to happen. You know, Willie's a young quarterback. He has just over a year's worth of starts under his belt. He'll get better.
Yeah, I'm not going to say I'm a Willie fan, but I'm a Drew fan. You know, I thought he looked good last year early in the season, and, you know, he had, you know, it was tough with that offensive line last year, but now that he has a little bit more protection, he's showing what he has, I think. And, you know, Darvin Adams had a great game. I think he could have a breakout season. You know, he had 121 yards and a touchdown. So I'd look out for him the rest of the season. I thought Stoudemire looked great on returns. He didn't break one back for a touchdown or anything, but I think there's a lot of potential there for returns with Stoudemire.
Yeah, the receiving core, I think, in Winnipeg, the guy I really like is Nick Moore. I know that's probably obvious. He's a veteran, but he's really become sort of like the go-to guy for Willie. Like, yeah, you mentioned Adams in his big game, and Denmark had a huge catch for a touchdown as well. But Moore seems to be the guy that he keys in on when he really, really, like, it's, you know, second and seven, and we need to get those yards. He finds Nick Moore. He's that reliable guy. He's probably not going to have, you know, a 200-yard receiving game. He's not SJ Green. He's capable of it, but that's not sort of his role. So I look at him as that sort of the anchor of that receiving core in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I thought, I really thought Winnipeg played well enough to win this game, but the turnovers killed them. I mean, they had three fumbles, so it's hard to win the game when you have four turnovers, so that's probably what cost them.
Yeah, absolutely. Also cost them is Liram Hirelahu on extra points. He's 6 of 10 for the year. And they lost by one, and he missed one. So these extra points now are starting to become kind of important.
Yeah, I don't get that. I mean, the guy, he hits field goals from 50 yards, but he can't hit the extra points. It's kind of a head scratcher. I mean, he has to start making those singles. If you know, 1 point can be, like you said, they lost by, how much did they lose by?
They lost by one.
Yeah, so. He needs to start making those. That's just the end of it. I mean, you can't keep missing those extra points. They're just going to have to start going for two every time. I mean, if they can't count on him, then they're going to have to start going for two.
Well, that's just it. They've left 4 points on the board, and I got to think that they'd be at least 6 of 10 on 2-point converts. So yeah. they're leaving points on the fields. And if I'm Mike O'Shea, I'm seriously considering going for two every single time. Because even if you hit it, even if you're 50% on 2-point converts, that's the exact same as being 100% on singles. So they gotta be good enough to score 50% of the time from the 3-yard line when they spread the field, and they got two, you know, bull running backs back there in Cotton and Marshall. So I gotta think I think every team would be better than 50% on 2-point converts. So if your kicker is missing them, you know, he's at 60%. Like, that's just terrible.
Yeah.
Why are you just you know, buck the trend and just go for two?
Yeah, I think we might start seeing that soon in Winnipeg.
Anything else you want to cover from that game?
Negatory.
All right, so let's move on to the Ticats talk.
Have to.
We're going to start with the news. As I jokingly said last week, if you remember, that there's always some breaking news that happens right after we record, and last week was no different. Literal seconds after I, you know, pressed stop on the record button and said our goodbyes, go on Twitter and find out that the Ticats had released Nick Grigsby. Now, I wrote a piece on 3 Down Nation about it, so I don't really have to get into it. If you want to know my opinions, you can go there and find it. So let's get your insight on this. What did you think when you first heard the news?
Well, I was pretty shocked. I didn't, you know, I heard he was practicing that day or the day before, I was expecting him back in the lineup against Montreal. You know, Holly hasn't been overly impressive. You know, Ford hasn't had that many touches. So I expected him to be back and be a dependable running back for at least a week or so before, you know, C.J. Gable comes back. I think that he could have maybe helped in that game against Montreal. But, you know, I guess it kind of makes sense because, you know, I'm not sure they're going to carry two American backs the whole year. So with C.J. Gable possibly coming back this week, you know, I don't think it was a question of his attitude. Like, there was questions in Winnipeg when he was there or anything like that. I just think that it was a numbers game.
Yeah, my overall point of my piece was that I understand why they did it. I just didn't understand the timing.
Yeah.
Like you said, Holly hadn't looked great. We'll get into him in a bit during our review of the debacle in Montreal in a minute, but he hadn't looked great up until that point, and I just thought that Grigsby would have been the better option, even if it was just for 1 week. But I also understand if they're going to make the move, you know, make the move because if Gable's healthy, and again, something we might get into later, but all reports seem to be that he might be a go for Sunday. There's really no reason to keep him around. It just makes me wonder then why they signed him back in the first place, to be honest.
Yeah, because
Gable wasn't hurt going into the offseason, and Madu was still there. So if Madu and Gable don't get hurt in training camp, is Grigsby a training camp cut? Was he brought in simply as a body? And if that's the case, then they bring in, you know, Holly and Ford. I don't know. Something about it seemed really weird to me.
Yeah, it is a bit odd. I don't understand why they signed both of them in the offseason and then cut one of them. But, you know, I guess, you know, we can't get inside Austin's head, so.
No, and if my memory serves me correctly, they announced Grigsby's signing and Gable's extension on the same day.
I believe so.
I know when we talked about it on the show, we talked about them at the same time. So if it wasn't the same day, it was like, one was on a Monday and the next was on a Tuesday, or you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, because I remember being a little surprised that they brought them both back.
Yeah, especially because they gave Gable a 3-year contract extension. Like, I thought that was weird because I thought Gable might have had NFL interest, but you know, the injuries and what have you. We don't really have to get into that, but yeah. So I don't know. There just seems to be something sort of, I don't know. Not that it's unsettling or wrong or anything. It's just something a little weird about it.
Yeah, because he played pretty well last season when he was put in there. So.
Well, he had the most rushing yards for any Ticat running back last year.
Yeah.
The only person who had more rushing yards in a single game was Dan LeFever when he had 200-yard games early in the season. So he was clearly, you know, and if you watch those games at the end of the year when he finally got inserted, he started to get more and more comfortable in the offense as he got going. And, yeah, he didn't have a great Grey Cup, but did anyone in Hamilton have a great Grey Cup? So.
But, they seemed to give him the ball quite a bit last season, and they had seemed to have quite a bit of confidence in him, so I'm sure he'll find employment somewhere else.
Yeah, it's I enjoyed watching him play. I wish him the best of luck. And with C.J. Gable back, though, or hopefully back, that's the guy we all sort of want to rally around, and we want to see him healthy for 14, 15 games, and that's the guy that I want to see get on the field.
Yeah, he can add a lot to the team. I mean, he's a great overall back, so. It's just fingers crossed that he stays healthy.
Yeah, all right. So that was really the only piece of Ticats news. Not a lot of news in the CFL period this week, like, really. Like, so let's unfortunately get on to what happened in Montreal last Thursday. I really don't have any words. You just go.
Yeah, it was, it was pretty ugly. You know, the offense sputtered all game. Claros, dare I say, looked average, Josh?
You looked worse than average.
I know. You know, the penalties really hurt the team. I mean, they had 16 penalties. What the hell was going on with Diakowski? I mean, 5 procedure penalties? What was up with that?
Well, evidently, he only had 2. There's if you kind of read between the lines, there Drew Edwards did a little bit of a piece on him yesterday. And in reviewing the film, both Diakowski and Ken Austin said, yeah, he was dinged for two. And Diakowski himself said two is two too many. But the other three might have been of the Phantom variety.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, so
that was I was watching the game. I'm like, what the hell is going on with him? I mean, you know, I couldn't tell if they're a phantom or not. You know, it's hard to tell.
Yeah, when you're watching the game on TV, of course.
Yeah, you know, it was just surprising. You know, a veteran like him getting all those penalties, but I guess you know, two is better than five. It's still not good, but. Yeah, that's too bad that there was three phantom calls, if that's what the film shows.
Yeah. Let's go back to Zach Collaros for a bit. I decided to go back and watch the game and look at the three picks. Mm-hmm. One of them, the one to Jonathan Hefney, the second interception, was just I don't know if him and the receiver were not on the same page or if Collaros just made a bad throw or what have you, but it was – he threw it right, like Hefney was the only one there to catch the ball, so
yeah,
not a great interception. The third one was on a tipped pass, which, you know, that can happen. Still, he needs to get the ball up higher. The first one, however, I don't know if that would have been an interception if Terrell Sinkfield doesn't fall down. He looked to be bumped a touch, and then he falls on the ground, and then like Tolliver's coming over, and Sinkfield's in the way, and Chip Cox just makes a play. I don't want to sort of, you know, let Collaros off the hook, but that first pick, which was kind of a, like, it sort of, you know, set the tone for the game, might not have been an interception if, you know, it might have been more on the receiver and maybe a missed call, sort of. I'm not going to go that far and say, like, oh, it should have been flagged, but, you know, there was a little bit of, it was a little bit more unfortunate than, say, Collaros just being careless with the football.
Yeah, I mean, his numbers weren't terrible overall, you know, besides the three interceptions, which you could argue that two weren't necessarily his fault, like you said. You know, almost 300 yards passing, so, you know, we'll just say that it was an off game, and hopefully he bounces back against Saskatchewan next week.
Yeah, well, and despite, you know, all those mistakes and penalties and turnovers and what have you, they still had a chance to win that game on the final play. Like, they were still in it till like 30 seconds left when Tolliver fumbled. And if Tolliver doesn't, you know, trip on the catch before the fumble, he might score. So, I don't want to blame it on bad luck. And, you know, full credit to the Owls for the win. They played. They did what they had to do to get that victory. But it just seemed like, you're right. The Cats were off a little bit, and there was, you know, a little bit of bad luck on their part, which just seems to happen to them when they go to Montreal. Like, no matter what, they just can't find a way to win there in the regular season.
Yeah, you know, I thought that Collaros was under pressure the whole game, you know. I'm not sure if that was because of Noel Thorpe sending the blitz all game or the offensive line kind of having an off game, but he didn't seem comfortable back there at all.
Yeah, he seemed to have happy feet, is what I kind of noticed. So,
yeah, with the you know, Tolliver had a big game numbers wise. Let's see here, you know, 7 catches for 106 yards, but you know, with that bomb late in the game on the last drive, and he falls down. I was screaming at the TV like, "What are you doing? Please don't! Like, why are you falling down like that? Like, there's no one around him." And then the fumble. So, you know, it's too bad. He had such a good game, and it was kind of overshadowed by those two plays.
Yeah, and speaking of good games, like, the offense was bad. We can just leave it at that. The defense, though, you know, you hold the team to 17 points, and more often than not, you're going to win. And we have to give credit to that Hamilton run defense.
Oh, yeah.
Once again, just astounding. They helped the Owls to 55 total rush yards. Rakeem Cato was the Owls' leading rusher, and he had 30, and most of those were on scrambles. They weren't designed runs.
Mm-hmm.
And going into the game, Terrell Sutton was the league's leading rusher, and Hamilton held him to 2 yards rushing on just 6 carries. Took him completely out of the game.
Yeah, just outstanding. You know, Sutton, I was really impressed with Sutton in his first couple games, and they completely shut him down, so And I think that Cato, you know, he's capable of really tearing a team up with his legs. So, you know, he had a couple carries for 30 yards. So I think that the Ticats run defense is just spectacular.
And we have to mention the three goal-to-go stops from the one.
Oh, yeah.
Just doesn't matter. Like, and this is the second time they've done that this year, so.
I thought that Montreal could, you know, they had three quarterback sneaks. You know, they could have switched up a bit. It was a little bit, you know, not much imagination there, but great on them for making those three stops.
Yeah, they held them. Do you remember last week when we talked about this game and I mentioned Fred Stamps being a Ticats killer?
Yep.
One of those times when I hate being right, but Fred Stamps had done nothing essentially for most of the year, and bam, seven catches for 119 yards goes off against the Ticats.
Yeah, a couple great catches in there too.
And one great catch that, to be quite honest with you, I don't think was a catch.
No, I think you're talking about the one where he's double covered right near the goal line there.
Yeah, and actually, and then after that, it was when they had the goal line stop, so nothing came of it, but. Mm. I don't know. From the angles that I saw, that ball sure looks like it hits the ground.
Yeah, I thought it hit the ground too. Like, you couldn't tell on a couple angles, but the one, it sure looked like it might have touched the ground.
Yeah, I saw two. One was from like the rear, and it looks like the ball's on the ground. And then they showed another one from sort of the side, and you could see the ball hit the ground there. Again, it's not like that one catch, you know, changed the game, because the Owls didn't get any points off it anyway. So it. Yeah, but Fred Stamps, Ticats killer. So we got another Ticats killer, not as, you know, impressive as Stamps, but another one coming up in this week's game that we'll get to in a bit. So they didn't hold Fred Stamps in check, so I'm sure hoping that they can do it with this the Saskatchewan receiver that we're going to talk about in a few.
Yeah, I hope so too. Especially the way that Glenn and that offense is playing, it's going to be a good test for that Ticats secondary.
Yeah, I guess one little other thing I want to touch on. We're not calling SJ Green the Green Hornet, right? We're all in agreement on that?
No.
Yeah, that's a stupid nickname.
No, we're not doing that. No.
Okay. Anything else you want to get into before we mock ourselves for our terrible bold predictions?
Yeah, I thought the Speedy B, you know, return callback, you know, that really hurt. I'm going to propose a new rule. No more punts. No more returns on punts, because there's just going to be a penalty, so let's just not do them anymore.
Well, that was a kickoff.
Oh, okay.
That was kickoffs.
No kickoffs either. No returns on kickoffs or punts.
Yeah, and
penalty. I mean, this you gotta. I don't know when these players are gonna learn that you can't touch player in the back and you just can't hold, because they're gonna call it. You're gonna see it. They're gonna call it. Just so no punt returns anymore or kick returns. Okay, let's just not do it, because there's gonna be a penalty.
Yeah, I think the call was ticky tacky on Grant, but to be fair. Anything small is going to get called in that situation, so just best not to do it. And it was a block that sort of did spring Banks, but we know how fast Banks is. Like, he probably would have beaten his man, so it was unnecessary. It was stupid. Yeah, it was, you know, maybe a little chintzy, but you're right. Just enough. Don't even bother trying, because you're going to get nailed.
Yeah.
So... My bold prediction for last week was wrong before the game even started. It was wrong right after we finished recording, because I said Grigsby would rush for 100+, and he wasn't even on the team. So, big X for me.
Yeah, and mine was not even close either. So I guess that's why they call them bold. It's not a very good chance that they're going to happen. So I think mine was Underwood would have 150 yards and two touchdowns or
that
something.
That was yours.
So. Yeah, so
far the only bold prediction that's sort of holding up is mine, that Banks will score 10 TDs on returns from there. Like, he should have three. He could have three. Maybe should's not the right word, but he could have three, and that still looks doable, and that's the one that everyone called me an idiot for. So hopefully we can keep that one. At least hopefully at some point one of us will get one of these right, and we can sort of brag.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so enough about last week. We're moving on. Ticats on Sunday, a Sunday night game, head into Ryderville to take on the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. What do you think they have to do offensively to win this game?
Well, I think the offensive line needs to be better. They need to give Claris more time in the pocket. you know, the run defense for Saskatchewan has been, what's the word? Horrid, I guess, this year. So
that's a good word.
I think they need to run the ball. I mean, Gable needs to get his touch. If Gable's back, I think they need to hand him off the ball quite a bit and test that Riders defense, test the run defense. I mean, if they watch the film, they have to see that these guys are susceptible to the run. So that would be one huge component of the game on offense next week.
Yeah, I think they need to attack the defensive secondary of Saskatchewan. They just signed Jeff Tisdale last week, and they just recently signed, I think it was yesterday, they signed Alex Suber. Now, these are two guys who are veterans of the league, but they were more known for their physical play. So I think if you attack those guys, you might get a few pass interference calls or some illegal contact calls, because that was sort of how they played the game in previous seasons. And I don't care how the Ticats move the ball down the field. I don't care if it's through flags. It's fine by me. So I say you got to go after those two specifically. But again, like you said, the Riders' defense just in itself has been atrocious. So going after anyone would be, you know, fine.
Yeah, I like to see them. You know, they've been doing a lot of the sweeps with Banks and Sinkfield. I like to see them, you know, just put them on a go route. Just use their speed and go downfield and air it out, you know?
Yeah. Ticats have been using the deep passing game a lot more this year. So it's not like it's not a component of their offense like it had been in years past. So I could see, you know, taking some shots downfield against Saskatchewan on Sunday.
Yeah, like Sinkfield's uber fast. Banks is super fast. I mean, use your speed, just air it out, you know? Like, yeah, I'm not saying like every play air it out, but, you know, sneak it in there and see if you can catch them, you know, get behind them and make a big play.
Well, and you know, that also will open up the middle of the field for Gable, if he plays, to run the ball and to catch those short passes, and for Fantuzen and Grant to make those, you know, 7-yard catches and turn them into 15-yard catches. You know, being a multifaceted offense, you know, helps everybody. So, yeah, take those shots downfield, and then everything in the middle will open up. And we know the Riders are susceptible to being attacked at pretty much every level of the defense. So there's a lot of areas that Hamilton could exploit this week.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully they have a huge game on offense to bounce back from that rather poor performance last week.
Yeah, so defensively, my big key is stopping Jerome Messam. They were able to hold Sutton, as we talked about just previously, to just 2 yards last week. And as I said, Messam is the league leader in yards from scrimmage. So he is a guy that they really have to key on and hold him in check. And the history shows that they can do it. He has had some good games against Hamilton. When he was in Edmonton, he had like a 2-touchdown and 100-and-something yard rushing game against them. The year he was most outstanding Canadian. So
yeah, I remember that game.
Yeah, I ran all over him, just was unstoppable. But Hamilton's run defense is tops in the league, so I don't see why they couldn't sort of, you know, he's going to get his touches and he's going to be a factor, but maybe if they can limit it, that's good for me.
Yeah, I got that too. I mean, if they can continue the run stuffing, that would be huge for the team with Messam and Allen, you know, the double tandem. If they can hold them to, you know, under 100 yards, that would be a big accomplishment, I think. I think that the D-line needs to get more pressure. They haven't been, you know, I know there's injuries on the D-line, but they just haven't been impressing me so far this year. They haven't been getting, they've been getting pressure with the blitzes, but the D-line itself hasn't been getting a lot of pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, they haven't been great in the passing game. We discussed how great they are, you know, on goal line stands, but
yeah,
no,
yeah.
I agree with you. They need to get a little bit more pressure. Like Justin Hickman, like where's he, buddy?
I was expecting a big year from him. So
he's just kind of, yeah, he's, you know, the one play he did make, he got flagged on it against Winnipeg when he did the tomahawk chop to, it wasn't Drew Willie. Willie was out of the game. Brian Brohm's head, and like, you know, he got the strip sack fumble, but it was negated by a flag, so it didn't really matter.
Yeah. So, you know, I'd like to see him. Maybe he needs Norwood on the outside there, you know, taking some, you know, pressure off him. But, you know, I actually I guess Norwood tweeted that he might be playing this week. I don't know if that's him just saying that or if there's actually any truth to that. Did you see that?
I did, and I hadn't seen any mention of him being at practice, so I don't know if he's going to be back. I guess we'll have to wait later in the week to see to see if he's on the field during practice for the Ticats.
Yeah, that'd be some good help for the D-line, I think.
Yeah, now I mentioned earlier about when we're talking about Fred Stamps, about a receiver from Saskatchewan that tends to play pretty well against the Ticats, and I think we both know who I'm talking about. That's Weston Dressler. Three times in his career, he's had over 100 yards receiving against the Ticats. He had 139 yards one game, a career high 180 and three touchdowns in the 2012 season opener. And he had 121 yards in another game. Interestingly enough, only one of those games was actually in Regina. The 121 game came either last year or the year. No, it was the year before, 2013, I believe. He had 121 in Saskatchewan against the Ticats. So he tends to play – he has some big games against them, but they tend to be in Hamilton. And he is coming off – like, he had a breakout game. It's like his breakout game for – like, the one that put him on the map was against the Ticats, too. He had six catches for 122 yards, and one of them was a 67-yard TD. I was at that game, so I remember, like, who the hell is this guy?
Yeah.
And from there on, he was just like – you know, superstar. So much like they needed to keep Fred Stamps in check last week and they failed to do so, Weston Dressler needs to be a focus of the secondary. Limit his impact on the game, period.
Yeah, they just need to stop him. And, you know, watch out for Jamal Richardson. You know, he doesn't seem to be in the starting lineup. I'm not sure if he is or not, but he comes in and then, you know, he just seems to have, like, these huge gains. Like, he'll have three catches for 70 yards or something. So he just comes out of nowhere. So keep an eye on him as well with the Riders' receiving corps.
Yeah, and, we, you know, can't not mention Kevin Glenn playing the Ticats. He's, since they traded him to Calgary in 2012, I believe he's only lost one start. The team he's played for has only lost one game, and it was last fall when BC came to Hamilton. I think, you know, he was a starter when they played in BC last year and he beat them. And he was a starter, I think, four times in Calgary when the 2 years he was there and they beat them in all four. So Kevin Glenn seems to enjoy ruining the Ticats and slapping them around a little bit.
Yeah, you gotta make him nervous. You know, I think Steinhauer is going to bring a lot of blitzes this game. You know, make Glenn nervous and throw up a couple picks, hopefully. So if Glenn's not comfortable, he's not going to have a good game.
Yeah, Glenn does have four interceptions on the year already, and Hamilton is a ball-hawking secondary. So
Yeah. Hopefully,
you know, a couple tip passes, maybe a couple underthrows get picked off, and, you know, who knows where we go from there.
Yeah.
So I have a little fun bet with a mutual friend of ours, Miss Jacqueline there on Twitter. She's going to go to the game. She'll be in Regina. She's an Ottawa native, but she's heading to Regina to watch the Riders and Ticats. So she proposed a little bet with me. So how it's going to go is at the top of next week's show, if Saskatchewan beats Hamilton, I have to list off 10 things that I like about the Saskatchewan Rough Riders. And they all have to be positive. It can't be like, well, I like when they lose or, you know, stuff like that. Or, you know, I liked you know, the 2009 Grey Cup when they had the 13th man, we all got to laugh at them. It has to be all positive stuff. And if Hamilton beats them, she is going to send me a list of the 10 things she likes about the Ticats, and I'm going to read those off at the start of the show next week. So that's a little sort of fun bet that we're going to have, and I'm hoping I win because I don't know if I can come up with 10 things I like about Saskatchewan.
Yeah, you're going to really have to brainstorm if they lose that one.
Yeah, I might just have to list off the 10 players I really like or something like that because –
Rider history.
Yeah, it's not going to be easy. You ready to make some bold predictions?
I am. I'm ready. Look like an idiot.
More correctly, are you ready to make some bold predictions that will be wrong?
Yes. All right.
Throw yours out, pal.
No. You first.
Well, I have two. I have two because I always come prepared. This is my. I always pick two just in case. Because the very first week we did this, we both picked Zach Caleros. Do you remember? You had him for 300 and whatever, and I had him for 400 and whatever. So I let you go first because I always have two ready in the chain. I'm ready to go. So if you take one of my players, and I can go off in another direction. So shoot it out there.
All right. I'm assuming that T.J. Gable is going to be back.
This is a good thing I picked, too, because the first one I picked was also C.J. Gable. So that's why I let you go first.
So I'm going to predict that he comes out guns a-blazing. You know, he's been – hasn't been playing at all this season. He's raring to go. So against this Saskatchewan run defense that has been lackluster at best this season, I'm going to say he rushes for over 100 yards, two touchdowns on the ground, and over 50 yards receiving.
Oh, my God. That's the exact same thing I had.
No way.
Literally, I have written down, Gable will have 100 yards rushing, 50 yards receiving, and two touchdowns.
Wow.
Yeah. So, good thing I came up with another one, or we'd have the exact same prediction.
Yeah.
Wow. Or, I don't know. I don't know if that's scary. If you're in my brain and I'm in yours, that's...
We do not tell each other the predictions before the show.
No, never do. But it's pretty scary that we could come up with the same thing.
Yeah.
So I will go with my backup prediction, which is a little less bold than I would like, but I have written down three tie catch receivers will have over 80 yards receiving and a touchdown.
Ooh.
So they will each – so let – I'm not going to put names on it, but for example, Fantuz, Grant, and Sinkfield will all have at least 80 yards receiving and a touchdown. But I'm not saying it's going to be those three, but three of the Ticats receivers will go off for 80 yards and a TD each.
I like that one. That's interesting.
All right. So we're nearing the end of the show, and it's time for the way we always end the show. We got some Twitter questions, so let's throw them out there.
All righty. First one comes from @JohnnyOneBall.
I'm sorry. Johnny One Ball? I hope that is about sports and not about his testicles.
I didn't even I read that out loud and then, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So Johnny One Ball, what you got
Johnny
to say,
One
buddy?
Johnny One Ball, I like that. Okay. Why can't the Cats get their offense in the end zone?
Honestly, I feel like they get a little too cute when they sort of get close. They're running reverses and they're doing trick plays and... they're not just trying to do what works. They sort of like switch their playbook up when they get close to the red zone. And it is infuriating. Don't get me wrong, but that's how I feel. I feel like they sort of outthink themselves, if you will.
Yeah. I think it just comes down to execution and, you know, they just have to use their tall receivers and use Fantuz, use Grant, use, you know, whoever, just toss it up and let them make a play. Or hand off the ball, you know. They just have to simplify it, like you said. Next one comes from Cam Beamer. Why is Steinhauer so hell-bent on rushing three? Only works for offense on second and long or a rookie QB.
Is he only rushing three? I always find that he tends to blitz a lot.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Like he does rush three. Like he seems to drop back when, you know, when it's late in the game, and he thinks it's good to, you know, put a lot of guys in the secondary. But for a lot of the game, it seems that he's doing a lot of blitzes.
Yeah, I guess the whole he only rushes three thing, I guess, comes sort of out of that first game against Calgary where they only rushed three on the big play. Where Fuller caught the pass and they were ended up to kick the field goal to win the game. But yeah, I haven't really noticed much. And in the Winnipeg game, they did a lot of 3-4 defense because of the ratio issues. So I don't think it's sort of a, you know, they're not rushing guys. I think it's more and the new rules, like I seem to be all over the map here, but the new rules also sort of, you know, dictate that you play a little bit more zone defense, and maybe that's, you know, put nine guys back and, you know, you cover up a lot more of the field on these passing plays. I don't think he's only rushing three a majority of the time. I find that he blitzes a lot more than he holds off, so I'm not really sure where this question is coming from.
Yeah. All right, at Major League CFL, what in the name of hell is going on? Seriously. Oh, I think he just needs to calm down a bit, Major League. Come on.
Yeah, just
get it together, bud.
Have a Sanka. Is that a reference that's way too old? Do they still?
Maybe I'm not sure what that.
Is Sanka still a drink that people is? It's like a decaf coffee. Do people still drink that, or do we just say decaf coffee now?
You could just say decaf. I never heard of that, but
you've never heard of Sanka?
No, I have not.
Oh well. Oh, all right then. Now I feel really old. You're not that much younger than I am.
You old bastard, you. All right, but yeah, you just take a chill pill there, Major League. Come on,
yeah,
get
relax.
It together.
Relax.
It's only one game, bud. It's okay. All right, next one is at Hammy a Hole. I'm not sure how that's. Yeah. Okay. Whatever. when do you suspect CJ Gable is back?
Well, we've kind of tiptoed around this, but it looks like he might be back this week.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I got my fingers crossed that he's coming back this week. So
yeah, me too. He's at practice. He was at practice yesterday. I'm sure once we stop talking, we're going to find out that he's been cleared to return and he'll be starting, and then we have to talk about it next week or something like that. Yeah. But yeah, all signs seem to be pointing that he will be the starting tailback this week against the Rough Riders.
Yeah, let's just everyone...
keep the fingers crossed.
Yeah, keep their fingers crossed, and also that he doesn't get hurt again, because we need him... it'd be great to have in the backfield again.
Knock on wood, man. Knock on wood. Don't jinx it. Jesus.
Yeah. Damn, I don't think I have who sent this one in. If you could play offensive coordinator for next week, how would you tweak the offense? Do you know who sent that in, Josh, by any chance?
I do not. I didn't even have that one written down here, so that's a surprise question that I didn't get a chance to prepare for.
So I'll talk about it.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay.
And I apologize to whoever sent that in. I said it earlier. You know, I'd like to see them air it out to Speedy B, put him in there, and just send him running, you know? Get him down the field, see if he can beat some defenders with his speed. And also, I'd like to see them rush the ball more with Gable back. You know, they haven't been handing the ball off at all, really, so... You know, hand the ball off and send Speedy B on some go routes.
Yeah, we pretty much covered how we would attack Saskatchewan. So, yeah, there's not really much I can add. So, let's move on to the next question.
All right. At Fender Guy asks, he wants us to relate one coach, one GM, and one player to a fictional character.
Okay, now this was my favorite question of the week. Not that I play favorites, but... He puts sci-fi or comic book hero or villain in there, and as we know, maybe outside of football and professional wrestling, I'm a giant nerd and love my comic books and my comic book movies. So once again, I have gone with two for each, so I'm going to let you go first, unless you just don't have answers. But if you got some answers, you take yours first, and then I'll do mine after. So let's start with player. You give your player, then I'll give mine.
Okay, I got Brandon Banks, The Flash.
Yeah, okay. See, that was my initial one, too, so I figured that's an obvious answer. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the first thing that popped into mind was Speedy B as Flash. So my second pick, it's a little obscure, but I picked Chad Owens as Mr. Mixelplex. Now, for people who aren't sort of well-versed in the comic books or the superhero genre, Mr. Mixelplex is like an impish, little annoying character that, you know, bothers Superman. And I see Chad Owens as a, you know, an annoying little gnat of a human being that bothers me. So, and the way to get rid of Mr. Mixelplex is to say his name backwards. I'm not going to do that because saying Mixelplex is hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping maybe that if we can say like Chad Owens' name backwards, maybe he disappears to the fifth dimension and then we don't have to deal with him again.
I'd be all for that.
Yeah. So that was that was a really nerdy reference. So anyone out there who gets it, you get some extra cool points with me. And I just did a thumbs up while no one's watching, so I look like a complete idiot.
All right. You want to go GM or coach next?
Let's go with coach.
All right, I got, you know, this might be obvious too. I got Ken Austin as the Incredible Hulk.
Holy so did I.
There you go.
So again, pick the second one, and again, this one's probably a little less out there because of the current popularity of Marvel movies, but I picked Chris Jones as Thanos. Thanos is the Mad Titan from the Marvel Cinematic Universe and the Marvel comic books. He's sort of like this crazy, you know, controlling megalomaniac, and Chris Jones is it looks like a crazy controlling megalomaniac, so I figured they fit perfectly.
That works. That works. Now for the GM. Oh, wait. Oh, I guess Austin would be my GM.
Oh, you used Austin for your GM as not your coach? Yeah, okay, yeah. That's fine. That's fine.
And I got Tom Higgins as Ned Flanders.
Okay. Yeah, that works. That works. See, I stuck with the superhero thing. Now, I didn't pick. So my GM, I picked. I have two here, and you didn't touch either one of them. So I'm going to go. I got Wally Buono as the Kingpin from the Marvel. You know, he's sort of like the elder statesman. He's, you know, behind the scenes. I'm not going to say he's scheming, but it's like, did you ever see that TSN thing, the around the table or whatever they did with the general managers?
Yep.
It seemed almost like everyone sort of deferred to Wally and was like, yeah, we know what we're talking about, but like, this is the guy that's done it all. And like, even Jim Popp, who's been around for like 20 years, was like, no, but Wally's Wally, blah, blah, blah. So they kind of sort of had reverence for him. And, you know, Kingpin.
Like Godfather.
Yeah, sort of. And like, I would have probably said like, you know, Don Corleone or something, but I wanted to keep, you know, he asked for sci-fi and comic books, so I stuck with sci-fi and comic books. And so Wally's sort of that like head of the table, you know, master gangster sort of thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, next one comes from at Deadneck. Okay, I guess he assumes that there's going to be 10 teams in the league, but when there are 10 teams in the league, should we scrap the divisions? Everyone plays everyone twice.
Okay, I say no.
Yeah, I say no too.
And in fact, I think if they get to 10 teams at some point, which I hope they do, I think that we – not scrap divisions, but I think that they should – play fewer games against the opposing division. And not every year do you have to see they don't have to play home and home every year. Mm-hmm. Have Calgary come here one year and then you go to Calgary the next, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that would take 5 games and then you have 13 left, and I know that, you know, the idea is maybe you don't want to see, you know, for Hamilton's sake, Ottawa here, you know, 3 times or 2 times or whatever. But then you'd have 13 games, because again, we're basing this on there's an extra team in the East, obviously. You'd have 13 games for 4 teams, so you'd play every team 3 times and one team 4. So you'd probably see maybe Toronto and Ottawa twice in Hamilton, and yeah, I feel like maybe, you know, push the interdivision games out and sort of focus more on the sort of intradivision rivalries, because those are the games that sell better ticket wise anyway. So, you know, one extra game against Toronto in Hamilton or one extra game against Hamilton in Toronto is better than, say, having, you know, Winnipeg show up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get what you're saying there. I wouldn't want one division, you know. Now with 9 teams, I could maybe see the one division. You know, I don't necessarily want to do it, but, you know, I'd just like to see 5 teams in the West, 5 teams in the East. I think that would look great with 2 divisions. I still think we could play. They could play each team twice with 2 separate divisions. So, you know, I'm not sure if I like the idea of playing teams 3 times or 4 times. I get where you're coming from, but I'd like to see them just play each team twice. I don't really like seeing. You know, I hated a couple years ago when there was 8 teams in the league. There was like so many back-to-back games with the same teams, and you'd play, you know, one team 4 times. I didn't like that as much. So no, I don't want one division if there's 10 teams. If there's ever 10 teams, I don't think, you know, I don't necessarily think there's ever going to be 10 teams. I have my doubts. I'm kind of a negative Nancy on that aspect. But yeah, if there was, I'd like to see 2 divisions.
Cool. Do you have any more questions? Did you get any more?
No, I think that's all I got.
Okay, because I got a couple, which is rare. I usually don't get the questions, but I got one from our buddy Joe, who's in our fantasy league at USFL Tecmo, and he said, compared to 20 years, 10 years, or even just a year ago, isn't this a great time to be a CFL fan? My yeah. Answer to that is, isn't it always a great time to be a CFL fan?
Yeah, it always was. You know, I think maybe 20 years ago the game was... how should I say this? It was more simple. Like, it was simplified. You know, there wasn't as many coaches. There seemed to be, you know, a lot more just the players just playing, you know. It wasn't coached up as much. There was more offense, it seemed. But at the same time, the league wasn't in very good shape. So it's kind of a give and take thing right there. You know, right now, I think we're at a point where the last couple of years haven't been spectacular on the field, but off the field has been the best it's ever been. And I think that with these new rules, we're, you know, it's been tough with the penalties and stuff this year, but I think that's going to improve, and the new rules will improve the game so that we can have, you know, the entertainment that we had 20 years ago and the good off-the-field news that we've always wanted. So I think that it is a great time to be a CFL fan.
Wow, talk about a impassioned sort of plea. I'm kind of speechless. That was, I got a tear in my eye, I think.
You like that?
I did. I got nothing to add. Yeah, it was poignant and perfect. And if that doesn't win us a goddamn podcast award, I don't know what will.
There you go. Vote for us, folks.
Yeah, vote for us. Hashtag Fave Podcast. Mike and myself. So remember a couple weeks ago when my buddy Richard sent you those questions?
Yes, I do.
So he got back to me and was like, I sent them to Mike because Mike's always the one that reads the questions. But he sent me one just as we were finished recording last week. So obviously we can get a chance to get to it. But he emailed to me because he was like, 140 characters wasn't enough for this. And he wasn't lying. This is quite the doozy. So stay with me here. He's got a bit of a preamble. And then we get to the question. And then we can get to it into it. So here's what he had to say. There was discussion of the mass amounts of offsides in week two. It had me thinking. I remember last year during an interview, I believe the head of officiating said that basically they only call offsides on the receiver if the ball is on the ground after the receiver has passed their line of vision, as the player actually blocks the ability to accurately make the call. As a fan in the stands or watching on television, we actually get a better view to be able to accurately call offsides on the receiver. What are your thoughts on adding another official that potentially sits in the press box or somewhere else with a more aerial view that is responsible for calling this penalty?
You know, that's a great question. It's a good idea. I just, you know, if I think there that would add to the penalties. I think that there's a lot of offsides with the receivers when you have the waggle and all that. So I don't know about that. If a player is half a yard offside, receiver's half a yard offside, it doesn't affect, you know, how the DB is going to cover him. It doesn't really affect the play. So I don't really have a problem with receivers going a little bit offside. You know, if it's, you know, it's against the rules, I know, but it doesn't necessarily change the play in any way. So I would just worry that, you know, there'd be a penalty on every single play.
Okay. I think it's an interesting premise and maybe something the league should try out in, say, the preseason to see how well it works and to see if it makes any sort of drastic changes to the game. Because I do think a lot of times when we think a player is offside, they just time it up so perfectly. Like, you see it with pass rushers, too, where it's like, how the hell do you get in the backfield so quickly? Mm-hmm. They, you know, they anticipate, and, like, these guys are professionals, and this is their job, and they do it really well. And I think every now and then, like, we look at Chad Owens or we look at Andy Fantuz. Guys like that seem to be the two that sort of get the knock of being offside all the time. Maybe they just time it up so perfectly that it looks offside to us, but upon review, no, you just, you know, nailed it. So, again, I think I like the idea theoretically. It's an interesting sort of rule change and maybe something the league could put into effect, as I said, in the preseason. I just don't know if it's going to make a huge drastic change. That's all.
Yeah, it's a very interesting proposal, though. I like the
Yeah, you definitely put some thought into it.
Yeah, good brainstorming there.
Yeah. So that's all for the questions. I'm going to scan Twitter just to make sure we don't have any news that we are going to be a week late on again. I don't see anything. I think we're clean. So I guess we can end this bad boy. As always, don't forget that you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. You can listen on 3downnation.com. 3downnation.com. I think you can even download the podcast off 3downnation.com. So there's lots of ways where you can listen. As always, if you want your questions answered, you can hit Mike up on Twitter. Give him your Twitter handle again, as
Mike,
we do every week.
Mike_Ticats.
And you can hit myself up at @JoshSmith_82. You can post your questions in the comment section of this post, which will be going up on Wednesday on 3downnation.com. Don't forget to vote for Mike and myself in your favorite CFL podcast on the CFL Twitter Awards. Maybe we should make like a campaign ad or something to post the beginning of every show until we win.
Yeah.
I don't think we can slander the other guys, because I actually kind of like most of the people that, because I interact with a lot of them on Twitter, so I kind of like them. I don't think I can really say too many bad things about them, but we can always just pump up ourselves.
Maybe I can do the slandering.
Oh, maybe you can. I guess you're not as interactive with them as I am. So yeah, maybe you can. We'll get an old political ad going. We'll get one of those like
you're just not ready.
Yeah, those bombastic sort of songs. I don't know. Maybe we'll figure something out, or maybe we'll just be lazy and just keep doing this every week, where we just say vote for us, vote for us, vote for us. So that's it for Podski Wee Wee this week. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Eat 'em raw.